Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Friday, everybody. Today is February 6th, 2026. And once again, it is a hard day to pick the top story because there is just so much happening in the world. It has been a wild week. Tech sell-off, Bitcoin sell-off, metals sell-off, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria. Well, this morning, we've got a story. And I first came across this story last night. It was posted by my friend Bob Coleman, CEO of Idaho Armored Vaults at Profits Plus ID. You should be following Bob on Twitter. He is excellent. And Bob posted this story about China's big silver short. Beyond Jiming, beyond belief, maybe. This one billionaire trader in China has amassed a short position on the Shanghai Futures Exchange of 450 tons of silver, all right? Now, a lot of you guys don't like speak in silver tons, right? What's that an ounces, all this stuff. Let me put this in perspective for you, all right? Let me help bound your thinking here. There's 412 tons of silver on the entire effing exchange. He's short 450 million. There are only 412 million. So let me ask you this. How would you ever cover that short? If you said you don't, congratulations, you can do basic math. You cannot possibly cover a short when you have sold more metal than exists on the exchange, unless, of course, you start sourcing the metal outside the exchange. Maybe you could go to London and you could get it, or you could go to New York and get it, try to bring some silver in there. But look, silver has been selling off. Yesterday was a brutal sell-off in gold and silver. Once again, probably the second worst day in history, Friday being the worst last week. But he cannot possibly cover this short position. Just the act of covering this short position will send prices vertical, theoretically infinitely high, because he'll run out of metal before he runs out of contracts that he needs to cover. And then there's also the fact that just the act of creating this position, a position of this size, is illegal. It's against the rules. There's position limits on the exchanges. One person is not allowed to take out a short bet in excess of all available liquidity in the market. So the Shanghai Exchange violated their own rules when they allowed this position to be created. And look, if he creates a short position that he can't possibly cover, he's virtually guaranteed to default if he tries to cover his short position. The exchange knows this, and the exchange knows that if he defaults, that they are on the hook for delivering the metal that he promised. Which means in allowing him to create this giant short position, the exchange signed its own death warrant financially, which means they have no intention of ever forcing this position to cover. And that, I think, is the story here. It's not, oh my God, there's this guaranteed short squeeze that's going to happen in China. And I'm sure somebody is out there saying that this morning. I'm sure there is one of these low IQ, every story is run out and buy silver, pump it, guys on X is probably saying, the price is going to go vertical any day now, pile in. That's not what's going to happen. They're going to reverse the trades. They're going to break their own rules. They're going to screw people, because the Shanghai Exchange would go bankrupt if they did, if they followed their own rules here, which they didn't follow their own rules just in allowing this position. This is just further proof that the Chinese silver market is an effing joke. Bigger joke even than ours, bigger joke even than London. And they're going to reverse the trades. Here's what's going to happen. They're going to screw people, all right? They're going to say, do over, all the longs who theoretically should be making buku bucks here, you just get your money back. Short, you're wiped out. We're not going to pay anybody the difference in the value of the position. And then people are going to show up outside the exchange, and they're probably going to hold up their piece of paper for whatever reason when Chinese protest. I guess they're not allowed to protest, so they hold up a little piece of paper. That's their form of protest. They'll line up outside the exchange. They'll all hold up their piece of paper. And then out of the blue will come a gang, dozens, maybe even hundreds of seemingly malnourished military-aged males, all oddly wearing matching white T-shirts and black gym pants, who will come out of the side frame, beat the crap out of all the protesters, and drag them away and restore social order and harmony. What a joke that they even allowed this to exist in the first place. Guys, the only conclusion you can draw from this story is that you should not take the Chinese silver exchange seriously. That is the conclusion here, because they just won't cover this short position. All right. So just temper the excitement when you see these stories. Oh, my God, this big guy is stolen all the silver and he's just short and it's price go vertical. It's GameStop with silver, which it pretty much is. This is a naked short. This is a massive naked short, but they will never cover it. They will break their rules. Mark my words. Maybe I'm wrong about that and the price would go vertical. I'd love for that to happen because I own a lot of the shiny, but it won't. They just won't. All right. Also going on this morning, we've got Amazon earnings. Amazon is the latest of the hyperscalers of the big tech companies to be completely deaf, dumb, and blind when it comes to AI capex. We just watched Microsoft get punished for increasing their capex. We watched Google get punished for it. We watched Meta eventually get punished for it. They initially rallied, then they sold off. The market doesn't want any more of this runaway capex BS. And along comes Meta with $200 billion of data center capex for 2026. And what happened? Amazon stock sold off 8.5%. The same thing that happened to all the other companies that did this. The market doesn't want this BS. They know they're not going to make any money. AI is about to be the punchline of a joke in every living room in America because of the Super Bowl commercials. And yet they do not get the message. They can't get the message because once they acknowledge that message, they know that all of their stocks will tank. But here's the rub. If they don't get the message, their stocks are going to tank anyway. This is a game of chicken, and that's the thing. If you keep playing, eventually you crash headfirst into each other and you die. But if you swerve, you lose. May the odds be ever in your favor. We got another interesting one. Bitcoin, brutal sell-off yesterday. Bitcoin went all the way down to 60,000 yesterday. 3-4 days ago, we were in the low 80s. So a massive sell-off in Bitcoin. We went down to 60,000, caught a bounce. Just about everything is catching a bounce this morning, by the way. Stocks are having a little bit of a relief rally. Metals are a little bit, and Bitcoin is having a little bit. We'll see if this relief rally has any legs. I don't think it will. We'll see what happens into the close today, and we'll see what happens after the close today. Are we going to find out somebody blew up this week? Are we going to have a war? Everybody knows banks fails and wars start on Friday after the bell, so it's going to be an interesting news day. But MicroStrategy, back to the Bitcoin story, MicroStrategy reported earnings yesterday, $12.4 billion loss due to their Bitcoin holdings. And a lot of people are talking about Michael Saylor, you know, he's going to blow up and Bitcoin's price is going to tank. Maybe that happens. Maybe it doesn't. That's a big risk. There's risks at Binance this week. The Tether peg was looking wobbly earlier this week. But I really think these treasury companies like Tom Lee's Bitmine is, I think, on paper, like one of the worst trades in history. I think only that one guy who sold a bunch of AA tranche of mortgage-backed securities to finance his short on AAA or on the – I don't know. There was that one guy during the Big Short. I messed up my A's there. But there was that one guy in the Big Short who had like the worst trade in history. It's almost that bad. I think these treasury companies – they're going to start going belly up pretty soon here. Maybe it's Strategy or maybe it's one of these other ones. Yeah, I don't know. I heard President Trump's World Liberty Financial had to sell a little bit of their wrapped Bitcoin. I have no idea what wrapped Bitcoin is, but they sold some of that yesterday. I think the forced selling is going to start very soon. We also got Stellantis. Oh, man, Stellantis absolutely brutalized today. Stellantis just took a $26.5 billion charge related to their getting out of the electric vehicle market, which I warned you guys about this. I warned you about this back in 2022, that the market doesn't want this bullshit, and yet they're doing it anyway, which is going to end up happening with AI data centers, the same freaking thing. But let's put in perspective Stellantis' loss here. $26.5 billion charge, the biggest one yet. Ford and GM all took big charges related to their overbuild of EVs as well. But at $26.5 billion, Stellantis' market cap is only $27.5 billion. That's the value of the entire company, and they're taking a $26.5 billion charge. So, of course, the stock is getting absolutely destroyed this morning because, theoretically, they lost the value of the entire company. How big a sell-off could this be? I don't know. Probably bigger than it's already been, and it's already been pretty big. EV is just an absolute disaster. Oh, but Cathie Wood and the World Economic Forum and all the guys on CNBC were so excited about electric vehicles and the energy transition. Yeah, it was fake all along, just like the AI bubble. We got jolts yesterday, too. The job market. Oh, that's doing great. 6.54 million job openings in the United States. well below expectations, down 386,000 from last month. The lowest job openings in America since September of 2020. And that's not even factoring in the fact that there are millions of ghost job openings being captured in the JOLTS report that don't really exist. Job openings that have been there for years that they're never going to fill for whatever reason. They're just posted on Indeed. The job market is frozen shut. That is not good. Rio Tinto has canceled their merger with Glencore. We reported on that merger back in January. Well, they couldn't settle on a price, so that deal has fallen apart. I believe that is the third time that deal has fallen apart now. They really can't get that merger across the finish line. We've got Poland is borrowing everything. This story is kind of wild this morning. Poland is issuing dollar bonds after they issued yen bonds, apparently something known as a samurai offering in Poland. It's like the euro yen, if you will. Poland is borrowing yen. They're borrowing dollars and they're borrowing euros. Why? Because they're building up the biggest military in Europe because the whole world is steamrolling into World War III and Poland is borrowing everything they can get their hand on. The world is steamrolling towards a liquidity crisis as well. And last one to wrap up the show, we've got to talk about private credit and Blue Owl Capital, who says they have no red flags in their portfolio of loans because the loan-to-value ratios are all very low. And I'm going to explain to you why that is complete and total bullshit. Stick around for the end of the show for that. In the meantime, why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance today. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button so you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads, because we do this one every single day. Right now, the S&P 500 is up 38 points, about 0.56% to the upside. Stocks are having a bit of a relief rally this morning after a rough week. The Dow is also up 0.56%, 270 points in the green. And the NASDAQ is up 145 points, 0.6% higher, somewhat lagging. The other indexes telling me that this probably doesn't have much legs. The dollar weakening here rather substantially. The dollar has had a pretty good week. It's gotten a lot stronger ever since Kevin Warsh was announced as the next chair of the Federal Reserve, although giving up some of that here, down 29 basis points this morning, 97.68 for the DXY. The bond market is quiet this morning, 30-year yield at 4.858%, off by a half a point. The 10-year yield is at 4.198, off by 1 point. The two-year yield is lower by almost 1 point at 3.475%, and the one-month is higher by a point and a half, 3.694% for the one-month treasury. Looking at Bitcoin, all right, there's a lot. We could do a whole show about Bitcoin, but we don't have that much time. Bitcoin had a really bad day yesterday, and I mean, look at that big red candle yesterday. Worst day Bitcoin's had in quite a while. Sold off over 10,000 at 1 point. We went as low as 60,000 and change yesterday. Now we've staged a little bit of a rally. We're at 67,000, up $4,000 from, actually up almost 7,000 from our lows. That being said, I don't think this rally in Bitcoin has much legs. We broke that 74.4 support line. That was the low from back during Liberation Day. The next support I see, guys, is 49,000. That was the low from the August 5th yen carry trade panic and the high following the ETF announcement. So I think Bitcoin's got plenty of selling to go here. Meanwhile, we got Bitcoin Treasury Strategy posts a $12.4 billion Q4 loss. They lost $12.5 billion in one quarter. But of course, Michael Saylor tells investors not to panic. Yeah, don't panic. You definitely shouldn't panic. What you should do is sell your daughters into indentured servitude and mortgage your kidneys and use the proceeds to buy more Bitcoin, or go to the thrift shop and buy every couch you can find, bring it home to your house and turn it upside down and shake it. And any quarters and pennies that fall out, use that to buy more Bitcoin too. That's Michael Saylor's advice on weathering Bitcoin winter. Bitcoin Juggernaut Strategy on Thursday posted a quarterly loss of $12.4 billion, but the firm's bosses reassured investors and told them to hold on as crypto markets plunged. Yes, please keep hands and feet inside the ride at all times. In an earnings call following the publicly traded company's Q4 25 results, co-founder Michael Saylor, CEO Phong Le, and executive vice president and CFO Andrew Kang all told investors that Strategy was in the crypto accumulating game for the long term. The two words on the back of the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, don't panic, Saylor, the pioneer of the company's crypto stacking pivot, said. The company now holds 713,502 Bitcoin, worth $45.9 billion at Bitcoin's current price. Strategy spent $54.2 billion on the buys, meaning an unrealized loss of $8.3 billion. Strategy is now underwater on their Bitcoin. Investors buy Strategy stock and the other yield offerings to get exposure to the cryptocurrency, but when the price of the asset dips, MicroStrategy, aimed at giving investors supercharged gains by outperforming the cryptocurrency, takes a hit too. Strategy stock is down 75% from its peak last July of nearly $435. You know, who'd have thought infinite money glitches are finite? I'm shocked to learn this. I thought infinite money would work forever. Strategy stock lost 17% yesterday, down to about $107, although it's staging a bit of a relief rally this morning, back up to 115 and change, up $8 here to, or 7.7% higher. Just about everything is having that relief rally this morning. Looking over at the commodities board, we've got gold is not really quiet. It's up a little bit here. We've got spot gold, 49.20. That's higher by $140, almost 3% higher. But still look at the trading range. We're still looking at almost $300 intraday swings between the highs and the lows. April COMEX gold futures are at 49.44. Again, $300 intraday swings, currently up $54 or 1.1%. Silver is a wild man. Once again, look at the volatility in silver. Spot silver currently 75.50. All right, that's up by $4.50 or 6.3% higher. Look at the high and the low, 76.28 and 64.08. $12 intraday swings on a quiet day for silver. $12. Amazing, this volatility. And again, we'll talk about this story in China in just a second. March COMEX silver futures, $75 and change. Intraday swings over $12 again for the between the high and low, down at $1.60 or 2.1%. I still like the shiny, but calm TF down already. Copper is pretty much unchanged here this morning. Platinum is down by 1%. Palladium is off by 0.1%. Crude oil is off by 58 cents, another 0.9% lower, 62.72 for March WTI futures. You know, the oil market doesn't seem to think war with Iran is about to break out. I mean, the headlines, if you go by the headline risk, it looks like the shooting could start at any second. And for by some measures, the shooting has already started. We had that drone incident earlier this week. But if we're about to go to war over Iran, as the Pentagon pizza indicator would suggest, the crude oil market does not see it or doesn't care about it. Now, taking a look at the silver chart, here's where we are this morning. Again, just wild, wild volatility here. We sold off as low overnight. We went as low as $64.34. Caught a nice bounce here, back up to 75. I just need to see this thing trade sideways before I can get my head about me. Right now, guys, as always, just stay off the damn leverage and be careful. People are going to get wiped out here by this. And look at this story. This is just nutty. China trader who made $3 billion on gold bets big against silver. A billionaire Chinese trader who made his name riding gold's record-breaking rally has turned his sights to silver's breakneck surge with a bet on the metal's collapse, now worth almost $300 million. Bayan Zhiming, who avoids the limelight and spends much of his time in Gibraltar, has made nearly $3 billion from bullish bets on Shanghai Futures Exchange gold contracts since early 2022. He's now built the bourse's largest net short position in silver, according to Bloomberg. Analysis of exchange data and people with knowledge of his investments. They asked not to be identified, of course. Bayan's big short comes with significant risk, as he has been forced to liquidate some positions at a loss in a volatile silver market, but he now holds a short that stands at about 450 tons of silver, or 30,000 contracts. So the metal sharp drop since last week has resulted in a paper gain of about 2 billion yuan, or $288 million. Including previous losses, Bayan stands to make a net profit of around a billion yuan based on his position and prices at the end of Tuesday. Silver is again sliding in Thursday trade and has tumbled more than 16%, almost certainly significantly increasing Bayan's proceeds. Now, Bob Coleman, shout out to @ProfitsPlus on ID on Twitter, had a fantastic post to this effect yesterday, talking about how this guy now holds a short that stands at about 450 tons of silver or 30,000 contracts. And according to Improved Metals, Shanghai Futures Exchange has roughly 412.5 million tons remaining, which means this guy owns more silver than the entire exchange has. This one trader shorting more than all the metal held on the exchange. obviously position limits had to be violated for this size of activity. So again, the exchange is just breaking their own rules, allowing this to happen. Many screen manipulation due to hedging activities or spread trades. However, the volatility in the silver market is coming from China, not the COMEX. Trying to identify the chaos and volatility to gain an understanding of why the market is acting the way it does. This appears to be a bear raid on silver by a large trader in China. To make matters worse, the only pure silver ETF traded in China has been closed for 4 days. This window of volatility has created confusion regarding fundamentals versus market structure. Leveraged traders in China are trapped. Shanghai Futures Exchange is now facing a potential credibility crisis as a failure to maintain an orderly market that is now impacting the global silver prices, silver markets pricing structure. China is making a freaking mess. They're breaking their own rules, allowing this position to exist in the first place. They're going to break their own rules to unwind it without killing themselves. Bob Coleman is correctly calling out their lack of credibility here. By the way, on this subject, the COMEX, the CME group, just passed another margin increase for the U.S. as well. So margin requirements are going up here in the States as this wacky position in China develops. Guys, just be careful. All right. I mean, if this guy is forced to cover, prices in China are going to go vertical again. But if that happens, the Shanghai Futures Exchange goes bankrupt and they allowed this position to exist in the first place. It tells me they have no intention of forcing this guy to cover. They are just going to break their rules and reverse the trades because it's not a serious market. It's not a real market. Meanwhile, we've got Amazon falls after a vow to spend $200 billion on AI this year. Oh, the same thing happened to Amazon that happened to everybody else who increased their AI capex. You'd think somebody might have got that message by now, but we are talking about big tech here, and they're somewhat set in their ways. See also electric vehicles. Amazon shares dropped after the company announced plans to spend $200 billion this year on data centers, chips, and other equipment, worrying investors that its colossal bet on AI may not pay off in the long run. The company reported spending roughly $130 billion on property and equipment in 2025. Analysts anticipated those expenses would reach about $150 billion this year. Instead, they're going to $200 billion. CEO Andy Jassy said the money predominantly would go towards the company's Amazon Web Services cloud unit, and most of that spending would be for AI workloads. Guys, they're increasing their CapEx a hell of a lot faster than their revenues are growing, which means they're dipping further and further in the red here. I think this is an extraordinarily unusual opportunity to forever change the size of AWS and Amazon as a whole. Yeah, blah, blah, blah. Setting money on fire. AWS revenue rose 24% to $35.6 billion, the biggest quarterly growth in more than 3 years. The company said in a statement, operating income for the cloud unit was $12.5 billion. The negative reaction is a result of bigger increases to CapEx than to AWS revenue, said Gil Luria, an analyst at D.A. Davidson. Gil's been a guest on this channel before. Much like Microsoft, investors are concerned that investments are growing faster than returns and that Amazon, Google, and Microsoft are locked in an escalating buildout that may not work out for all of them. In other words, the great game of CapEx chicken, it is still going on. They're burning investors' money to keep warm. And look at this from Walter Bloomberg here. Apparently, Amazon has just filed a mixed shelf offering at undisclosed amount. But if you guys don't know, a mixed shelf offering, that means the company intends to issue both new debt and new shares to raise the money to pay for that $200 billion in CapEx. Amazon has exhausted their free cash flow. Now they're going to go into debt and dilute their shareholders to keep setting this money on fire for an AI investment that will never pay off. Good God. And Amazon is being appropriately punished, down 8.3% ahead of the opening bell, $204.18, off by 18.5 bucks. An 8% drop in a $2.38 trillion company. What's 0.08 times 2.38 or 31? Okay, that's only about $200 billion, a little less than $200 billion of market cap evaporating at Amazon this morning. Hey, that's the same amount of CapEx that they're spending. Maybe those two might be related. Hey, well, I just throw it out there. Meanwhile, we got this one in Bloomberg, and this is pretty interesting. There's two different ways you could interpret this article. Traders chase AI-resistant stocks as disruption fears hit tech. A new group of stock winners has emerged as technology shares slide. Companies with businesses that artificial intelligence can't replicate. The S&P 500 index dropped 2% this week, pulled down by software companies as investors concerned that AI will disrupt those business models intensified following the rollout of new tools by startup Anthropic. At the same time, home builders, transportation companies, makers of heavy machinery posted strong gains. Consumer staple firms, already considered havens in a downturn, are up 4.7%, heading for their best week since 2022. It's a reversal of the thesis that's driven the three-year bull market in U.S. equities. Technology was long the market's juggernaut on the expectation that AI would transform the economy. Now investors fret many tech players will be left behind in that very transformation, and the world of physical goods looks more attractive by comparison. All right, so there's two ways you can interpret this article. The first way, I think what they're intending to say, is that AI is going to be so awesome, it's going to disrupt all these industries, and so a great investment is to invest in industries that AI can't possibly disrupt, like transports, like consumer staples. Another way you could interpret this article is AI is such a dog shit investment that your best bet is to invest in something that is so far from AI, it couldn't possibly be dragged down by the sell-off in AI stocks. That's my interpretation of this article. You tell me which one you think is the right takeaway. But I can tell you guys, once again, I'll repeat, I don't own any of these names, but I do have my little consumer staple shopping list handy here. Hormel, Kraft Heinz, Coca-Cola, General Mills, Clorox, Campbell's Soup. Those are the kind of names when everything goes to hell in a handbasket where you can hide out, because people buy chili, soup, and bleach during a good market, and they buy chili, soup, and bleach during a bad market. These are all nice dividend payers. It's a good place to ride out the storm, and it's kind of what this Bloomberg article is talking about, and all those names are up big this week. But silly me, I made the list and never bought any of them, so oh well. Meanwhile, Stellantis plunges on $27 billion bill for EV pullback. $27 billion. That's kind of a lot. I think that's a lot of money. I mean, don't get me wrong here. I don't deal in those kind of numbers typically, but it seems like a big number. Stellantis announced 22.2 billion euros. That is $26.5 billion U.S. of charges on Friday as it scales back its electric vehicle ambitions, hammering its shares as automakers pay the price for misjudging the switch to cleaner driving. Nobody saw this coming. The move is the biggest in a series of write-downs, including Ford and General Motors, as many Western automakers pull back from a battery-powered models in response to Trump administration policies and weaker-than-expected demand. The charges announced today largely reflect the cost of overestimating the pace of the energy transition that distanced us from many car buyers' real-world needs, means, and desires, said CEO Antonio Filosa in a statement. In other words, we tried to jam EVs down the market's throat, even though people didn't want it, and it ends up that was a very expensive mistake. The reset we have announced today is part of the decisive process we started in 2025 to once again make our customers and their preferences our guiding star. Giving customers what they want. What an effing concept. Instead of jamming thing down people's throats, see also AI, giving customers the things they want. What a breakthrough in business ideology. What an epiphany Stellantis has just had. Look at this stock, down 25% this morning. Probably halted at the open, I'm guessing, which is why it's not shifting all over the place right now. Oh, there it is. Maybe it's trading. A quarter of their company up in smoke, $7.13 for Stellantis shares. Look at the market cap of this company, $27.55 billion. They just took a $26.5 billion charge. They just wiped out almost their entire market cap and value in one quarter. Good God. And remember, nobody saw that coming. Meanwhile, we've got U.S. job openings. The JOLTS report came out yesterday, and it was not good. And remember, we didn't get the non-farm payrolls today. We were supposed to, but government shutdown, they delayed it. But the labor data we did get this week was pretty bad. ADP payrolls, the initial and continuing jobless claims, they were lousy. And now we've got JOLTS also lousy, as well as a lot of the ISM reports had weak employment figures. Job openings in the U.S. fell by 386,000 to 6.542 million in December, the lowest since September of 2020, and well below expectations of 7.2 million. This was a huge miss in JOLTS here. The number of job openings decreased in professional and business services, retail, trade, finance, and insurance. Regionally, openings fell the most in the Northeast and the South. Regionally, they fell everywhere, but most in the Northeast. Meanwhile, hires and total separations were little changed at 5.3 million each, with quits at 3.2 million unchanged, while layoffs at 1.8 million were little changed. Look at a five-year chart of JOLTS here. Job openings in the U.S. has been in steady decline. And keep in mind, guys, a lot of this big run-up that we saw 2021 and 22, these were these ghost job openings, the duplicate positions, positions that are never going to be filled. So the job market is even worse than this trend would indicate. Meanwhile, we got this one. Rio Tinto's Australian investors applaud the end to Glencore takeover talks. This merger was announced back in January. It would have created the biggest mining company in the world had they been able to close it, but they couldn't. Couldn't get it done. They couldn't agree on price. And so for the third time in the last decade or so, Rio Tinto and Glencore have failed to merge. It's like that couple that keeps breaking up and getting back together and breaking up and getting back together. It's, okay, you guys have fun. Beginning to see a pattern here. But this deal fell apart once again. Now, this story is pretty amazing. Poland considers dollar bond sales after record samurai issue. And I learned something today. I now know what a samurai issue is. I have never heard that phrase before in my life. But Poland is borrowing everything. That's the takeaway here. Poland is considering another international debt sale during the first quarter, eyeing a dollar bond after its record issue of yen-denominated notes, according to a senior government official. Karol Czarnecki, the head of finance ministry's public debt department, told Bloomberg that a dollar bond can't be ruled out following the samurai deal. And a samurai deal is when a country outside of Japan borrows yen, which basically loans yen into existence. So it's a lot like the euro dollar, if you will, when dollars are loaned into existence by European banks. So the samurai deal is like the euro yen. All right, maybe I'll start a channel. I'll call it Euro Yen University. I'll wear a big wig that makes me look like the scientist from Short Circuit. Number is 95. I think Jeff Snyder's awesome, by the way. I love Euro Dollar University. I think that channel's great. I'm just busting chops this morning. Previously, he had said that Poland was ready to tap both the dollar and the yen debt markets in early 2026. The government in Warsaw is front-loading its foreign currency debt sales for 2026 to help finance record borrowing needs, in part caused by a jump in military spending amid Russia's war in neighboring Ukraine. And by the way, they had also just finished a euro deal. They issued euro bonds just 4 weeks ago. So Poland is borrowing euros, they're borrowing yen, and they're borrowing dollars. Why? To pay for military spending. Poland has the biggest army in Europe now, by the way. Most people don't realize that. Poland's defense spending has gone wild. It is a sizable, significant force, technologically advanced and growing. And they're borrowing everything they can get their hands on to pay for it. Europe is going into debt big time in this military spending buildup. The U.S. is already in debt big time. We're getting further in debt. Everybody's borrowing everything to build things that go boom. We can see what's coming here, guys. It's sad, but let's not deny what the world is doing to itself. And last but not least, we've got Blue Owl sees no tech red flags as shares extend record plunge. Yep, covers eyes. No red flags here. Can't see a single one, according to Blue Owl. Again, guys, I've been trying to warn everybody about private credit for more than a year now. This is going to get ugly. Blue Owl Capital's management told investors that its software lending portfolio is in pristine condition. Pristine collateral. Have we ever heard that before? Have we ever heard, oh, don't worry, our collateral's fine. It's definitely not going to be a problem. Okay. Dismissing risks from the AI-driven sell-off, even as its shares continued to be punished on Thursday. The company's software loan book is strong and isn't seeing a deterioration in performance or meaningful losses, said co-CEO Mark Lipschultz during a call discussing earnings. Those loans have, on average, a loan-to-value ratio in the low 30% range, meaning the software debt is protected by a strong equity cushion. Yep, ample reserves. We're all good here. We don't have red flags, Lipschultz said. We don't have yellow flags. We actually have largely green flags. Our flags are great. You're going to love our flags. The tech portfolio continues to be the most pristine amongst all of our portfolios. Nothing to see here. Move along. And look, a loan-to-value ratio in the low 30% range. That does not surprise me. Do you know why? The LTV, I'll tell you why the LTV is so low. The LTV is so low because they just make up the V. These are privately held debt offerings, privately held companies. They just arbitrarily make up a number that is way higher than anybody would ever be willing to pay for it for the V. And of course, when you make the denominator bigger, you make the value go lower. And so the only reason their loan to value ratio is so low is because this company's full of shit. That's why their LTV is so low. But don't worry, their collateral is pristine as their stock gets just absolutely bludgeoned in this sell-off. They're just making things up. It's not marked to market. It is marked to myth. That is how they account for it. And that's why this article is complete horse manure. And I just want to say thank you very much to Mr. Bart Stapleton. Thank you, Bart, for supporting the channel. He says, always a great show. Thanks, melonheads of the world, unite. Yep. Or as I like to say, bad spellers of the world, untie. My friend has a t-shirt that says that. I think that's hilarious. Thank you, Bart, for supporting the channel. The Feral Grandma, frightening name. It gets me every time. Sends shivers down the spine. The Feral Grandma gifted 5 Nobody Special memberships. Thank you so much, Grandma, for supporting the channel. I appreciate that very much. Welcome to the Melon Patch, you 5 baby melons. Be sure and say thank you to the Feral Grandma with palms faced up in a non-threatening posture as you back away slowly. Thanks, Feral Grandma. Uncle Fezzer says, I've been watching Clive Thompson. He's predicting a large COMEX delivery issue in late February, March. Has Bob Coleman said anything about that? I haven't had the chance to ask Bob about that, but I can tell you Bob is typically a voice of reason in a crowd that is being drowned out by voices that are screaming about COMEX deliveries and warrants issued and stops and issued. We've heard this before. We've heard this for years, and it never materializes. But I can tell you Bob is much more worried about that story going on in China. China is exporting chaos in silver markets. I don't know what the hell they're doing. But I pay more attention to that guy's bed blowing up in silver shorts. And look, we saw the same thing with, remember that guy, Big Shot, he called himself, who blew up in the nickel market? I think that was in 2023. And what did they end up doing? They just reversed the trades. The price of nickel went vertical because, was it vertical or did it crash? Maybe it was the price of nickel crashed. But for whatever reason, this guy couldn't possibly cover his debts. And they just reversed the trades. And all the people who should have made a bunch of money got robbed and totally screwed. And I think that's what they're going to do in China. So I can't speak to this Clive Thompson prediction. Have not heard anything about that one. Thank you, Uncle Fester, for supporting the channel. The Pasta Man is back again. He says Shanghai Futures Exchange is corrupt compared to what? The CME? As crazy as that sounds, yes, Pasta Man. They are corrupt even compared to the CME. And I've been saying that for a while, or pretty much all week. The China silver market is an even bigger joke than ours is. Ours is a joke. Don't get me wrong. Theirs is a bigger joke. Now, interestingly enough, we had another margin increase on the COMEX this week, the CME group. I think it takes effect this morning, actually. It's probably going into effect now. So this is what, like their 10th increase in 12 days or some ridiculous number. Don't quote me on that. I'm exaggerating, although I haven't exaggerated in 100 million years. But the margin hikes, a lot of stackers are like getting upset and upset and increasingly so. And look, it does feel like you're getting kicked when you're down. But understand, if they keep up with these margin hikes on the COMEX and the CME group, there is a limit to this. Theoretically, once you get to 100% margin requirements, you can't go any higher because nobody's going to post more margin than the price of the item, which means at 100% margin requirements, we have a pure cash market, which is every stacker's wildest dream come true. So, you know, I don't think we'll ever get there. And theoretically, the market would break long before we got to 100% margin increases. But understand the margin increases is supposed to get rid of the rampant piling in of reckless levered bets and get more to people who actually intend to buy and sell the metal, which is what stackers supposedly want. So I'm not too worried about the margin requirements going up, and especially because the margin requirements apply to the shorts and the longs alike. And right now, I think people are probably piling in on the short side. See also this nut in China. And so the margin requirements eventually will hurt them more than they hurt the longs, and they'll take prices back up. But the volatility ain't going away, that's for sure. Thank you, Pasta Man, for supporting the channel. Spacecraft 24. Notice the craft with a K. Is that like mac and cheese in space? In space. Yes, when they're building Elon Musk's data centers in space, they'll have spacecraft mac and cheese. Sure. He says, your sailor sounds like Dr. Evil. Well, begin the unbearably slow dipping mechanism. No, Mini-Me, we do not eat our kitties. No, thank you. Oh, well, thank you very much. Yeah, my sailor is a work in progress. All I have is you got to talk from way in the back of your throat without letting your larynx vibrate at all. And you have to be really rigid. Like, you got to act like you got a metal rod running up the length of your spine while you're talking, almost like the guy's a paraplegic. That's my sailor. It's a work in progress. I can fine tune it a little bit, but we'll get there. Thank you very much, Spacecraft, for supporting the channel. Lisa BV2 says, happy Friday, Jack and Melons. Thanks for all you do. Thank you so much for the well wishes, Lisa, and a happy Friday to you as well. Thank you for being a melon head for 23 months. VR Sim Racer says, AI guy equals nutty Chinese billionaire. Nope. The AI guy is a bunch of people. I don't think he's the nutty Chinese billionaire. He's a U.S. bullion dealer. At least one of him is. Yep. That's the case. But there's several of them, dozens of channels. There is a whole cottage industry of creating fake AI content, flooding the airwaves to try to game the YouTube AdSense algorithm. It worked really well. And then YouTube started cracking down on it last fall. Right around the time Johnny Ag started popping up everywhere is when YouTube started demonetizing everybody. And I know all these guys started pivoting to high-value target U.S. audience, elderly high-value U.S. audience, where they could do brand deals, which is like bullseye for the bullion dealers. And I know of at least one U.S. bullion dealer who has been involved in amplifying this message. I don't know if he's the source of the message, but he certainly amplified it. And a lot of these Johnny Ag channels are pulling from his Twitter feed and then pumping it into the airwaves. So no, I don't think it's a Chinese billionaire. Possibly more to say about that in the future. Hunt and Cover. Thanks again, VR Sim Racer. Hunt and Cover says, this is what a penny used to look like. Memory lane. I don't have a penny. Oh, wait, no, it's a Canadian penny, but I do have, we'll pass this off as a penny. Get a good look at this baby, because they ain't going to be around much longer. I think that, yeah, that's Queen Elizabeth. This is a Canadian penny I keep here. But yeah, pennies, they're not making them anymore because they already took the copper out of them. Wasn't worth the copper. They filled them full of zinc, and now it ain't even worth the zinc. Gotta love it. Thank you very much, Hunt and Cover, for supporting the channel. Thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melon Heads this morning. Don't forget that like button on the way out. And you new guys, hit that subscribe button so you can come back on Monday. We do this every weekday. Thank you guys very much for all the super chats and the generous support of the channel, as well as you magnanimous Melon Heads on YouTube, Patreon, and Buy Me a Coffee. Today at 2 p.m. Eastern Time is our weekly get-together on Zoom. Looking forward to that. Links down below. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.